I have a message for pro-life evangelicals for Biden.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Should we be one-issue voters? Meaning that there is one issue that is so important to us that that will decide which way we vote. Should abortion be that issue? Should the slaughter of the unborn in the womb be that issue? Should we say that we cannot vote for a candidate or a party that is pro-abortion and a candidate that is pro-life, even though if he or she may not be as strong on other issues, if they're pro-life, they get our vote? Where do we stand on that? Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Is it justifiable? In the days of slavery, would have been a righteous and right thing to do to say that we are one-issue voters and we cannot vote for the party of slavery, which, of course, was the Democratic Party. We cannot vote for that party. Is that a righteous and right position to hold to as believers today? Or should that be the starting point through which we filter everything else to eliminate candidates, parties that we cannot support? And if you claim to be pro-life but plan to vote Democrat, I want to hear from you. 866-34-TRUTH. Yes, I categorically differ with that, but I do want to hear from you. 866-348-7884. I want to be as clear as I can. Each of us must give account to God for our particular views. Each of us is going to stand before God. You're not going to stand before me. I'm not going to stand before you. We are ultimately accountable to Him, and it's His approval that we want, and it's His judgment that we fear. All right? Having said that, I also want to say that my personal opinion is that if you feel, for ethical reasons, that you cannot support either candidate, in other words, you can't vote Democratic because you are a follower of Jesus and you value life, and therefore you cannot vote for the pro-abortion party, the radically pro-abortion party. You can't do that. But you have various issues with Donald Trump and feel that the way he leads the country is destructive. So you can't vote for either one. I respect that. I understand that. I would not go in that direction myself, as you know, but I understand that if you said, no, I'm voting my conscience, even if I know this person can't win, I'm voting for them because they hold to my values, or I'm just putting in a protest vote to make my voice known, to tell both parties I'm dissatisfied. I understand that. That's between you and God in that respect, and I understand it. But I do not understand, as much as I've tried to, as much as I've listened to people, as much as I've interacted, I cannot understand a vote for a Democratic candidate when they are the pro-abortion party. Now, last night, I had just seen an article that featured this clip that you're about to hear from former Vice President and now presidential candidate Joe Biden. He was asked a question, and he replied with a very strong pro-abortion answer. Shortly after seeing that, may have been within 5 minutes, certainly within 10 minutes, I was interacting with a grad on Facebook Messenger, and he said, Dr. Brown, did you see this link? And it was a link for pro-life evangelicals for Biden. All right, let's listen first to what Joe Biden said last night.
I knew whenever I was graduating high school and entering college that I wanted to obtain my degree and start a career before starting a family. Having access to birth control and safe reproductive health care was imperative in making that true for me. So considering the new Supreme Court nomination of Amy Coney Barrett, what are your particular plans to protect women's reproductive rights in the U.S.?
Number one, we don't know exactly what she will do, although the expectation is that she may very well move to overrule Roe. But the only responsible response to that would be to pass legislation making Roe the law of the land. That's what I would do.
That's what he would do. Every single one of you, who considers yourself pro-life and was going to vote for Joe Biden. He has made himself as clear as he possibly could. Remember, 1973, when Roe v. Wade became the law of the land, it overturned all anti-abortion, all pro-life laws in states across America. Where they existed, they were overturned. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, it would now put things back to the states to make these decisions in the ways that they are. And that's why there are bills that keep coming forward that could make it to the Supreme Court that could challenge Roe, which is why it's so important to see someone like Amy Coney Barrett on the court. Again, no one knows how people will vote. We've seen that over and again in recent years. But you do your best to get people on that will vote righteously, that will stand for life, that will stand for justice and for constitutional principles, obviously. So no sooner do I see that this is what Joe Biden says, that if the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, then the only responsible thing to do and what he would do, and obviously with Democratic backing, if the Democrats retake Congress, then what he would do is pass a law making Roe v. Wade the law of the land. And that's exactly what the Democratic platform says, that they would codify it. They would stand for it staunchly. Now, it's not just Joe Biden. It's Senator Kamala Harris. Now, I want you to see this. This is NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Act, and whatever the acronym stands for. I forget, it's just known as NARAL, of course, Pro-Choice America. So congressional record on choice on pro-abortion, Kamala Harris has a 100% score. This radical pro-abortion movement gives Kamala Harris a 100% score. She has rightly been called the most pro-abortion candidate in American history and could well be president. All right, let's see what she has to say directly about the subject. I got a couple of clips from Kamala Harris. We'll start here.
Women have been given the responsibility to perpetuate the human species. Our bodies were created to do that. And it does not give any other person the right to tell a woman what to do with that body. It is her body. It is her right. It is her decision.
Uh-huh. So very plainly, yes, she has this unique gift to bring forth children, and she has the power to decide to terminate the children in the womb. It's her choice, her body. Okay, so standard rhetoric there, nothing new, but that's her position. Here's another statement that she made in terms of her views on abortion.
I'm going to put in place and require that states that have a history of passing legislation that is designed to prevent or limit a woman's access to reproductive health care, that those laws have to come before my Department of Justice for a review and approval, and until we determine that they are constitutional, they will not take effect.
Whoa. Whoa. So go ahead, states. Go ahead, pass your pro-life legislation, but Department of Justice, I'm running this thing. I'm going to see if that's constitutional. We're going to shut that thing down before it even happens. You want to know how radical she is on these things? There's an article I saw last night on FRC.org, Friendly Research Council. God help us. Kamala Harris voted against protecting already born babies from being legally murdered. I just want to scroll through some of this article just so you see where her stance has been. So this was August 13th, 2020. On Tuesday, presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden announced California Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate. So people are now responding to that. Throughout her career, Harris has been a champion for abortion and a leading advocate for liberal policies that harm family and suppress religious freedom. On issues concerning sexuality and religious liberty, Harris is an original co-sponsor of the Equality Act. We know about that. Earlier this summer, Harris praised the dangerous Supreme Court decision in Bostock versus Clayton County that redefined sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity. Goes on and on. As Attorney General, Harris refused to defend California's state constitutional amendment that defined marriage as being between a man and a woman. On and on it goes. On abortion, Harris has voted against every pro-life piece of legislation she could, including bills with bipartisan support. For example, earlier this year, she voted against the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Act, which would have protected unborn babies from abortion procedures after the point at which they can feel pain, 20 weeks. She voted against that. Harris also voted against the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which would have required doctors present during a failed abortion, an abortion that results in the birth of a living infant, to provide the same level of care that would be offered to any other baby at the same stage of development. Harris voted against Pain Capable in 2018 and Born Alive in 2019 as well. Okay, that's a little snapshot of how radically pro-abortion she is. David DeLeiden was part of an undercover group that got footage of Planned Parenthood employees and leaders talking about the selling of baby parts for profit. Got this actual footage. And rather than the courts going against Planned Parenthood for this barbarism, they come after David DeLeiden. And I want you to hear David describe Kamala Harris's involvement in this. Check out this interview.
Tell us more about your encounters with her and a raid on your apartment.
Yeah. So in April of 2016, at the behest of Planned Parenthood, Kamala Harris ordered a search warrant served on my home in Orange County. I think it was a total of 11 agents of the California Department of Justice sent by Kamala Harris came in, overturned my entire one-bedroom apartment. They seized all of the video recording equipment, all of my computer equipment, everything that was, all the electronic equipment that was used to do the undercover filming. Fortunately, there were backup hard drives and, you know, attorneys had copies of stuff and other things. So they didn't take anything that I absolutely needed in order to continue to do my work. But they primarily, they were looking for the videos. And they were looking for the original videos. We have in the investigator notes from the Attorney General's office now, they recorded in their case notes Planned Parenthood specifically requesting of Kamala Harris's office that they would specifically go in and seize the videos from me. So they were trying to take all the raw footage away and trying to do a huge cover-up. They weren't successful at doing that, but that was That's just one of many things that Kamala Harris, as Attorney General of California, was willing to do to put the powers of her law enforcement office at the service of the interests of a powerful and favored political backer at Planned Parenthood.
That's reality, friends. That's reality. I do not understand in the sight of God how you can call yourself pro-life and vote for Biden-Harris as president and vice president. We pray for them. They're people for whom Jesus died. I'm sure they have good qualities as well. But when you stand for the slaughter of the unborn, you do not get my vote.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, as I'm introduced every day as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, it means a lot to me. Just saw a contribution on YouTube from Wilberforce. Please continue to be our voice. Dr. Brown, hope to see you in Israel next year. Then in Hebrew, Am Yisrael Chai. Yeah, join us. Check out our Israel tour at AskDrBrown.org right on the homepage. It was originally scheduled for May of this year. Then we had to move it to October. Now it's been moved to March 2021. So something to look forward to in 2021, really the trip of a lifetime. 866-34-TRUTH. Should we be one-issue voters? In other words, if we had the Republican Party and the Democrat Party both strongly pro-abortion, we vote for neither. If one is strongly pro-abortion, the other is strongly pro-life, then that becomes a determining factor. Is that being myopic? Is that not looking at other issues? Is that being small-minded? Or is that the righteous place to start, at least a starting point, and then we go down the list from there? But that's at the top of our list. How does God feel about the slaughter of the unborn? I have a new article up on our website and elsewhere. It's titled, My Message to Pro-Life Evangelicals for Biden. My message to pro-life evangelicals for Biden. I'm going to go through some of the content of that with you in a moment. But let's go to the website of pro-life evangelicals for Biden. It has some prominent people. well-known professors and evangelical leaders, Ronald Sider and Richard Moe. These are men who have contributed in evangelical circles for decades. Maybe if you have a right wing and a left wing of evangelicals, they'd be more in the left wing, but these are respected voices and with prophetic calls to the church and things like that. Well, let's go through and see what their arguments are. What do they actually have to say? So on the website, in all caps, it says this: as pro-life evangelicals, we disagree with Vice President Biden and the Democratic platform on the issue of abortion, but we believe a biblically shaped commitment to the sanctity of human life compels us to a consistent ethic of life that affirms the sanctity of human life from beginning to end. Now, right at the outset, I have an issue with that statement. If you are affirming the sanctity of human life from beginning to end, but terminating it before it even starts in this world, where is there a beginning and an end? What are you holding to? What sanctity? Because you're already terminating it and voting for aggressive laws to stand for the terminating of the unborn, to stand against the rights of the baby in the womb, to stand for everyone else's right to do as they please and choose with that baby in the womb. And remember, 99% of all abortions are not related to rape or incest or the health of the mother. So even if you said, well, I know it's still a baby in the womb, but I would make exceptions there, even if that was your view, that's not the issue in 99% of the cases. So let's not even discuss that, okay? Let's not even focus on that at the moment. Although once you recognize it's a baby in the womb, then you don't terminate that baby in the womb. It takes tremendous compassion sometimes in very difficult situations and walking with people for years to get them through these things. Nonetheless, once you recognize it's a baby in the womb, not just tissue or a clump of cells to be removed, then you begin with sanctity of life there. If you wipe it out there, you don't have it the rest of the way. It's that simple. You say, well, these are great Christian thinkers. There must be some rationale. Okay, let's keep reading. Let's see what they have to say. Let's see their argument. Many things that good political decisions could change destroy persons created in the image of God and violate the sanctity of human life. Poverty kills millions every year. Now, I'm going to read the statement in the tracks. Those watching, we keep it on our screen here, all right? Poverty kills millions every year. It's true. And Trump's policies have certainly helped alleviate poverty, booming economy before COVID, all right? So, agreed, poverty kills millions. You don't get adequate health care, you have other issues, et cetera, and, you know, around the world, starvation. And yeah, but in America, our economic policies were helping alleviate poverty, not accelerate it under Trump. Okay, so does lack of health care and smoking. Smoking? What does smoking, what in the world does smoking have to do with anything here? And aside from the fact Trump's a non-smoker, I mean, it's, what in the world does smoking have to do with voting Democrat? Lack of health care. Yes, lack of health care hurts people. But we understand that both parties want better health care for people. The question is how to get it. Racism kills. Yes, racism does kill. What kills even more is incitement towards race riots and things like that, which are stirred by the left, by the way. And for every person that does die as a result of racism in America, and one is too many, how does that compare to at least 700,000 abortions a year? And that number has been twice as high in the past. Unless we quickly make major changes, devastating climate change will kill tens of millions. There's a debate about exactly what needs to be done with climate change. But no one is willfully saying, you know, let's just kill people with it, the way we're saying, yeah, go ahead and terminate babies in the womb. Poverty, lack of accessible health care services, racism and climate change are all pro-life issues. As the National Association of Evangelicals' official public policy document for the health of the nation insists, faithful evangelical civic engagement witness must champion a biblically balanced agenda. Therefore, we oppose one issue, political thinking, because it lacks biblical balance. Right, let's step back from that for a moment. All right. We oppose one issue thinking. Well, if that one issue is massive, if that one issue results in the taking of more than 60 million innocent lives over a period of decades, 60 million innocent lives I mean, we're talking the populations or close to the populations of whole nations like England or Italy or France or Germany, much more than the population of Canada. I mean, those are the types of numbers comparatively that we're talking about. We're talking about almost one-fifth of the current population of America. And you're talking about the most innocent of all being wiped out in the womb. Now, for every woman who's had an abortion, and when I speak about it, it opens up fresh wounds. Turn that into prayer for our nation. That love that you have, that sensitivity that you have, that compassion that you have, that feeling of loss that you have. Use that pain, because God's forgiven you as you've come to him in repentance. He's forgiven you through the blood of Jesus. But take that pain and turn it into prayer for the next generation of unborn, that they will have the privilege of making it out of the womb. And those of you who've had abortions and feel the weight of it, or a man that paid for your girlfriend to have an abortion or insisted on it or something like that, there is forgiveness if you come to the Lord. There is forgiveness if you cry out, confess your sin. But, you know, you say, okay, Pol Pot, right? And I am not comparing Joe Biden or Kamala Harris to Pol Pot, okay? Pol Pot, responsible for the genocide of 2 million Cambodians. And what was that, 25% of the population, something like that? Well, you know, we disagree with his genocidal policies, but we think he's doing other things for the good of the country, so he gets our vote. What? What? Or, you know, we think slavery is terribly wrong, but, you know, we don't like all of Lincoln's policies, so we're going to vote for the pro-slavery candidate. What? Yeah, I mean, we think segregation is evil, but, you know, George Wallace has some good economic policies that'll help blacks, so he's going to get our vote. What? And I'm not putting George Wallace in the category of Pol Pot either, although he was a segregationist, okay? And there was much wrong with many of his policies. I'm still not making that comparison, just as I'm not making the comparison with pro-abortion candidates. But I am saying this whole thing, well, we don't just want to, you know, have one issue. Well, that one issue is paramount, massive. And it's about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands every single year. And in some place like New York City, more babies aborted than born. Yeah, you start with that one issue. You better believe it. And God cares about the blood of the innocent. Let's go back and listen to their reasoning. Just finish out their statement. Knowing that the most common reason women give for abortion is the financial difficulty of another child, we appreciate a number of Democratic proposals that would significantly alleviate that financial burden: accessible health services for all citizens, affordable child care, a minimum wage that lifts workers out of poverty. They know full well that the Democratic policies have not reduced abortions. They know full well that a party that is so radically pro-abortion is not going to suddenly alleviate women from poverty so they decide that they can go ahead and have their babies. And a lot of it's just convenience, going to mess with my career or whatever. For these reasons, we believe that on balance, Joe Biden's policies are more consistent with the biblically shaped ethic of life than those of Donald Trump. Therefore, even as we continue to urge different policies on abortion, we urge evangelicals to elect Joe Biden as president. That is a despicable statement to me. And I say that recognizing the men and leaders behind that as having done much good and having a heart for the poor and having a heart of compassion and being willing to challenge the status quo of American Christianity. I appreciate all that, but I find that statement despicable. Now, is it a coincidence that, say, Ronald Side and others edited a book on the spiritual danger of Donald Trump, the spiritual danger of Donald Trump? Yeah, they edited that book, and that book has some very, very, very strong content attacking President Trump. I bought the book when I was researching for my book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? And I quote from the book in there, and they raise many valid concerns in the book, concerns I share, and I balance out when I decide how to vote. And there's other content in the book that to me is just full of anger and venom and animus toward Donald Trump. That to me is the part that didn't come out in that statement, but that to me is what underlines it. That to me is the bigger issue, a deep animus towards Donald Trump, because of which they'll vote for Joe Biden. Let me say it again. I find the concept of pro-life evangelicals for Democrats voting for Biden-Harris, I find that despicable. I'm just sharing my heart honestly. I'm that passionate about it. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today as we focus on the concept of, quote, pro-life evangelicals for Biden. I can understand pro-life evangelicals that have an issue with Donald Trump for other reasons, even though he's the strongest pro-life president we've had. I could understand people saying I can't vote for either candidate, or I'm just so sick of the political process, or it's never going to change anything. I understand all types of concepts of, hey, I'm this candidate shares all my Christian values, so I'm voting for the one I believe is the best candidate, not just voting for the one who has the best chance of winning. I understand that. There are elections in the past where I wrestled, like, do I vote at all because of the choices given, right? I understand that. What I don't understand is people who say they're pro-life voting for the party of abortion, the radical party of abortion, the militant party of abortion, the party that has shifted in so many ways to become more and more radically pro-abortion. That's what I have an issue with. You say, well, Dr. Brown, you're really talking strongly. Yeah, I believe these things strongly. What makes this different than in the days of slavery, having the same view in the days of slavery? Saying, no, I am a pro-abolition Christian. I'm a pro-abolition Christian, but there are other issues we're looking at other than slavery. And I think the Democrats, even though they're pro-slavery and we don't like that, I think their policies are better than Lincoln's and these other ways, so we're going to vote for the Democrat. I don't see that. I just don't see that. 866-34-TRUTH. I understand there are other issues. Look, I've had conversations with black friends, and they say, okay, you're excited about justices being appointed to the courts, but from what we can tell, when those conservative justices get in, on average, a black man for the same crimes and same background is sentenced to a stiffer sentence than a white man for the same crimes and the same background. We look at that. Yes, evaluate everything. Look at all the issues. Fair enough. But start with putting the blood of the unborn at the top of the list. Start there. Go through Scripture. If there's one thing for which God will destroy a nation, judge a nation, yes, idolatry, absolutely. But remember, we are not under the Sinai covenant. In other words, that as much as America has certain Judeo-Christian roots that are strong in the midst of all the other mixture and the problems that we had, the fact is we are not a covenant nation like Israel was called out of Egypt by God in the same way, with the Bible telling us these things and God saying, only worship me. So yes, idolatry is destructive, but you can argue that that is also a religious issue, and you could have atheists. America could have people from all backgrounds and all religions, and they're welcome to come here. You can be a Hindu and a polytheist. You're welcome to come here. But there are universal moral principles, and at the top of the list is the shedding of the blood of the innocent and the killing of children. You say, well, abortion is different than that. Yeah. Different in kind, in terms of specifics, yes. But when you look at the carnage, when you look at the reality, you're talking about something that is all part of that same terrible tree of shedding the blood of the unborn. Just different branches is what we are talking about. I want to go through some of my written response to pro-life evangelicals for Biden. But first, we'll go to the phones. And we'll start in Wisconsin with Ann. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hi. I wanted to share something regarding the topic issue that you're discussing today.
Go ahead.
I actually didn't know that you were going to speak on this issue, but I feel very strongly, so I changed my question what I was going to say. So I'm looking here. First, I need to say this. I'm actually I'm a black person, and I'm looking here at this article that I'm reading, and it basically states here, in 2018, approximately 2,400 human beings lost their lives to abortion each day in the United States. On average, 19% were Hispanic, 38% were Black, and 35% were white. That translates to approximately 456 Hispanic children, 912 Black children, and 840 white children. It says here that statistically, 29% of Black pregnancies end in abortion. And it says that Black women almost have abortions five times more likely, to have an abortion than a white woman on average.
Yep.
So when I look at these numbers here, people need to be educated. It is extremely sad. I know there's a lot of stuff that I do not know. There's a lot of stuff that I'm still, so much stuff I don't know. But to me, it's a no-brainer. What kills the person faster than termination of a pregnancy? That's going to kill a person faster than being incarcerated. So when you look at these numbers, when you see what's affecting the Black community, when you see what's harming Black people, to me, this is one of the major issues that is causing death in the Black community. And not only that, with children, even in where I'm from, a child was shot in the head, unfortunately, made headlines in the news from gang violence, a Black child. And I'm saying Black babies matter.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. All children matter, of course. All children matter. But I'm trying to say this right here, this is just terrible. This is a deal breaker for me. So if you say that I'm a one issue voter, when it comes down to life or death, like immediately death, of course I'm going to vote for life. So
yeah.
I just wanted to share this. Thank you for listening and thank you for having me.
Yeah. And thanks so much for sharing that. And if you will just check online, you will find that if you look in Black America, all causes of death combined, right? So be it heart disease, be it cancer, be it car accidents, be it gang violence, you know, all types of death, drug overdose, whatever it is, you know, happens in all communities. But you add them up for the Black community, abortion is more than all of them combined every year. So there are websites like blackgenocide.com and others that talk about this attack on the Black American community. I've always been especially outraged by it because I look at it as one of the most demonic, ugly, direct attacks on a portion of our population. And please hear me. I am not blaming Black mothers and pointing the finger at them. I'm blaming the society that is being set up a certain way. Yeah, every individual is responsible for choices they make. I'm looking at this as an attack on my Black brothers and sisters, a satanic attack to wipe out a generation of people that could be world changers, that could be people used to make a great impact on this nation, getting wiped out before they even have a chance. That's how I've looked at it for years. And when you look back, yes, with the origins of Margaret Sanger and some of her eugenics policies, she did believe that immigrants and Jews and Blacks and others, they were like weeds, you know, and they're only going to hurt things. So, yeah, the more that can be eliminated through abortion, the better. And then you end up with disproportionate amounts of Planned Parenthood clinics in poor areas, in minority areas. Oh, that's compassion. No, that's genocide. Thank you for the call, Ann. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Deborah in Maple Grove, Minnesota. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I am so grateful for what you're saying. You are definitely speaking my heart. You've allowed me the privilege in the past to speak of my own abortion experience. So for any of your listeners who think there's anything that is okay with abortion or that a woman has a right, no, we don't. I had one. We don't have that right. I am horrified to hear what you're saying about evangelicals for pro-life, for Biden. Again, exactly what you're saying. This is this is demented. This is something is wrong with them. I pray for God's mercy over Christian leaders who would say such a thing, that you can be an evangelical leader and vote knowingly pro-abortion. There is something horribly wrong. Thank you for exposing this, Dr. Brown. Thank you for the clarity you're giving. I'm going to spread this YouTube to everyone I know and ask them to share it with people. People are deceived. I pray God's mercy on those leaders that are deceiving people, leading them to vote this way. Absolutely shocking. And so, Father God, I just pray for mercy. I pray that you get this message that Michael is spreading, get it out there to people who don't know any better, who don't understand that the light and the truth of the knowledge of God would come, that they would not be deceived into voting in a way that you judge, that is destroying lives of not only babies, but of mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and nations. I ask your blessing upon Dr. Brown and upon this program in Jesus' name. Thank you, Dr. Brown.
Hey, Deborah, thank you for calling 866-34-TRUTH. Listen, let me say again that God is your judge and my judge, all right? And that you will have to stand before God and give account for your actions, as will I. We'll have to give account for our actions, for our words. Every human being who's walked on this planet will stand before God and give account. Those who believe in him, those who deny him, those who don't think about him, we will all give account. I'm simply sharing as one that will give an account to God. I'm sharing my heart honestly. I am seeking to be a voice for the Lord and a voice for you and a voice for the unborn. Hence the passion with which I speak. Let me say once more. If you say I cannot vote Democrat because of their policies, starting with abortion, but I don't trust the political system and I don't think we'll ever change things that way and we just work pro-life grassroots and I have too many issues with Donald Trump, so I can't vote for him. So I'm just voting for a third-party candidate that holds to my values or a protest vote. I understand that. Even when we say, well, if you don't vote against the Democrats, then it's voting for the, I understand that. But you still have to vote your conscience. I do not. Look, I've had discussions. I've opened the phone lines when it was Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump to say, please, if you're an evangelical and you're pro-life, please explain why you're voting for Hillary Clinton. I understand there are born-again followers of Jesus that vote Democrat. I don't understand it. I will speak against it simply because of abortion. Oh, there are a bunch of other things as well. But that alone, it's that big. You just heard the stats from a black woman in Minnesota speaking about the slaughter of the unborn at disproportionate numbers in the black community and then the Hispanic community. And then, of course, all the others. God help us. God help us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Remember, friends, that Joe Biden has just said that if the Supreme Court has Amy Coney Barrett on it and they do overturn Roe v. Wade as president, then he would overturn that. He would make Roe v. Wade the law of the land and overturn what the courts said. So, in my article, where I plainly, strongly differ with, quote, pro-life evangelicals for Biden, I write this. These pro-Biden evangelicals claim that the most common reason women give for abortion is the financial difficulty of another child. And so, quote, we appreciate a number of Democratic proposals that would significantly alleviate that financial burden, accessible health services for all citizens, affordable child care, a minimum wage that lifts workers out of poverty. Oh, yes, I respond. If we vote Democrat, they'll help these poor women out of their poverty, and thus abortions will be reduced. In all honesty, I ask, can you really say those words with a straight face in the presence of a holy God? Are you not perhaps driven more by deep opposition to Trump, as expressed quite forthrightly in other writings by some of this movement, this pro-Biden movement leaders, than by the hope that a vote for Democrats will help save babies' lives? The statement concludes with, quote, for these reasons, we believe that on balance, Joe Biden's policies are more consistent with the biblically shaped ethic of life than those of Donald Trump. Therefore, even as we continue to urge different policies on abortion, we urge evangelicals to elect Joe Biden as president. I respond, tell that to the more than 60 million babies slaughtered since 1973. Tell it to the babies viciously terminated in the third trimester, some of them with their brains sucked out while still alive. And tell that to Brenda Pratt Schaefer, a registered nurse from Dayton, Ohio, who testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee on November 17, 1995, about what she witnessed when assisting a doctor aboard a baby boy in his 26 and a half week. She stated that the baby was alive and moving as the abortionist, quote, delivered the baby's body and arms, everything but the head. The doctor kept the baby's head just inside the uterus. The baby's little fingers were clasping and unclasping. His feet were kicking. Then the doctor stuck the scissors through the back of his head, and the baby's arms jerked out in a flinch, a startled reaction like a baby does when he thinks he might fall. The doctor opened up the scissors, stuck a high-powered suction tube into the opening, and sucked the baby's brains out. Now the baby was completely limp. These pro-life evangelicals are voting for the party that has supported these barbaric procedures for years. Indeed, they are calling on other Christians to vote for the party that opposes the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which would guarantee medical care for a baby that survives abortion. In fact, a senator, vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris, voted against this very act, and earlier this year she voted against the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Act, which would have protected unborn babies from abortion procedures after the point at which they can feel pain, 20 weeks. Yet these enlightened evangelicals state that they oppose one issue, political thinking, because it lacks biblical balance. With all respect, I say this. Do not talk to me about biblical balance while urging evangelical followers of Jesus to vote for the party that justifies the slaughter of more than 60 million babies in their mother's womb and will fight tooth and nail to codify Roe v. Wade. Any mention of biblical balance that doesn't start with concern for the shedding of innocent blood is so far out of balance, it's no longer biblical. Yes, I'm passionate about this, and you should be as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Gareth in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. What's on your mind, sir?
Hey, Dr. Brown. I've been tracking the COVID numbers. I'm a staunch anti-abortionist. And just to give people a little bit more numbers, like the previous lady, to get a good grasp, in North Carolina, unfortunately, we average approximately 75 abortions per day. In 190 days, roughly, since the first COVID death, there have been over 3,640 people die of COVID in North Carolina. In the same time, over 14,700 babies have been aborted in North Carolina. God have mercy on us. God have mercy on us.
Yeah, and Garrett, that's a choice. In other words, we didn't choose to put people down with COVID. They contracted it and debates what's the best way to stop, prevent. But everyone wants to cut the death down to nothing and do what we can to save lives. You hear willing choices being made to terminate the life of the unborn. And a party saying, we're going to fight for that. We're going to fight for it right up until the moment of possible birth. If a woman, towards the end of the ninth month, feels, say she lives in New York State, and she just feels emotional, I can't handle another child. She can abort that baby right up to the last minute. It's legal. When that was passed in the state of New York, the legislators celebrated this. Yes, great victory. Virginia, same thing. You say, but what if she's going to have a breakdown? Well, give the baby up for adoption. That's a viable nine-month baby. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Samuel over in England. Where exactly in England, sir?
I'm from the West Midlands in a town called Dudley.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. What's in your mind?
I just want to thank you for what you're doing and speaking of this very important issue. And I just wanted to speak to the people of America, especially those who are evangelicals and are pro-abortion. And I wanted to say to them, if you were going to go and, let's say, decide where to go to church, the number one priority of where to go to church would be the gospel. You may consider things like soteriology, and you may consider things like the spiritual gifts. All those things are legitimate things to consider, But the number one thing would be the gospel and the Trinity with that. So why is it such a big deal when you're going to vote in a general election in America to say, oh, well, we don't want to be like a one party, a one person issue. We don't want to just vote on this one issue. This is life or death. If you're going to decide on where to go to church, you would decide on the gospel first and foremost. Then everything else would fall into place.
Yep.
So my message to the to these evangelicals who are for abortion, in a sense, I would say to them, let's be consistent. If you're going to decide to go to a church because of the gospel, then when you vote in this general election, make sure you don't vote for somebody who is pro-abortion, and God is watching us all, and that should humble us.
Amen. Thank you, Samuel. Clearly and articulately spoken, much appreciated. And folks who say, well, we're not pro-abortion, we don't like it, well, then do not vote for the party that backs it, that supports it. And that is this party today, the Democrat Party today, and the Democrat ticket is a far cry even from the Bill Clinton Democrat Party when he was elected and their stance on abortion. Things have radicalized, friends, even more. Let's go to Michael in Owensboro, Kentucky. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I have had evangelicals who are voting for Biden explain it to me this way. They cite statistics that talk about, that show how overall, year after year, abortions are going down anyway. So even though we haven't, we haven't overturned Roe v. Wade, abortions are trending down. Therefore, this kind of gives them the green light to go ahead and vote for Biden and not have to vote for Trump, which they don't want to do. And everything, it kind of ties it up in a nice bow, and everything makes sense. I don't know if you've heard that argument or not.
Yeah, so you'd say, look, we're maybe 700,000 abortions a year now compared to, at the height, maybe 1.5 million. So things are trending down. So let's break that down on several levels. One reason they're trending down is the tireless efforts of the pro-life movement and the recognition of the reality of the baby in the womb, the 4D ultrasounds and things like that. So that's one reason that things are trending down. Now there are others. There are other reasons as well, wider in society, but that's not Democrat, Republican. They're just larger cultural issues as well. But that one reason is the tireless efforts of pro-life people and pro-life legislation getting passed and more of a stigma put on abortion. That's one reason. So what they're doing is now rowing in the opposite direction. Against that positive tide, they're rowing against it. And they're saying, we are now going to empower someone to put perhaps hundreds of justices over a 4 or 8 year period in the various courts, and potentially even to pack the Supreme Court. Biden and Harris won't say that they won't do it. They would say, we're just going to pass something to say we're going to add more members to it to lock in Roe v. Wade, to make it impossible for states to pass pro-life laws. So they're actively working against it. And not only that, and I would challenge them, I'd urge them to watch this broadcast or listen to this broadcast. And my article, if you haven't seen it, what's the exact title? My Message to Pro-Life Evangelicals for Biden. But I am not comparing Joe Biden to Adolf Hitler. I am not. God forbid anyone hears me say that. I want to use an analogy, though, all right? Some of you hate Trump. I'm not comparing Trump to Hitler. I'm not comparing any of these people to Hitler. Okay, all clear. Let's just say that during the Holocaust, that for various reasons, the annual slaughter of the Jews drops. And instead of 1 million slaughtered, it was only 800,000. Well, it's trending downward. We like other things about Hitler. We'd vote for him. Even the thought of that would be so vile and immoral, you couldn't think of it. Again, I am not comparing Biden to Hitler. I'm not, would never, ever, ever, ever do something like that. But I'm saying the argument is an immoral argument. Well, numbers are going down anyway, so we'll vote for the party that supports the slaughter of the unborn and codifying it by law. We'll fight tooth and nail against people like you and me standing up for the life of the unborn. Shame on that position. Yeah, I'm passionate about it.